The U.S. government is firm in its position that HAARP is just an atmospheric research facility. But is it more than coincidence that since going online, some experts have reported strange weather anomalies, including massive floods, hurricanes, and earthquakes? HAARP went online in 1994, and construction continued until 2007. There are reportedly a total of 5 known ionospheric heaters, including HAARP, in the world today. There are possibly 20 other ionospheric heaters in existence all over the world. There is no conclusive proof that any of them are being used as weather weapons, though they do have the ability to manipulate the ionosphere. And that brings us to something else. December 2001. Scientists at NASA's Ames Research Center in Palo Alto, California, make a discovery. In studying more than 100 earthquakes with magnitudes of 5.0 or greater, they find that almost all of them are preceded by electrical disturbances in the ionosphere. Could there be a connection to HAARP or a facility like it?
To say that HAARP can artificially excite the ionosphere in such a way to cause an earthquake, well, it alarms me.
Dr. Agnew experienced the power of ELF waves firsthand back in the 1980s. He was hired by an energy company to locate oil and gas using the same kind of ELF waves at much lower frequencies to carry out his search. It's a process called Earth tomography. But during one particular incident, Dr. Agnew believes his use of HAARP-like ELF waves accidentally triggered an earthquake.
It was in the spring of 1987, we arrived in Roseburg, Oregon, to use our ELF technology to search for oil and gas. Setting up that day, we had a little bit different results than we expected, because the instant that we energized it, there was between a 4 and 4.5 on the Richter scale earthquake that occurred. We were so amazed about what seemed to be cause and effect. We get to an area that has a high propensity for earthquakes, in an area known as the megathrust of the Pacific Northwest. We turn it on, and an earthquake occurs.
Dr. Agnew demonstrates how he may have triggered the quake.
This is a scale model of what the area looked like in Oregon when we scanned for oil and gas in 1987. The strata right here represents the megathrust area underneath the ground. The rock represents the potential energy set up in the ground from a tectonic stress. What we're going to do is introduce ELF waves and demonstrate that it can, in fact, trigger an earthquake.
In this case, Dr. Agnew is using a stereo speaker to produce the ELF waves needed for his demonstration.
ELF waves, extremely low frequency waves, are just like a subwoofer. In your car, you can actually feel the vibrations through your body. ELF waves are the same way. They vibrate the earth, and at right resonant frequencies, they can have devastating effects.
When the speaker is activated, ELF waves begin to emit. Tiny vibrations in the sand are detected. Then a few seconds later, the rock representing a fault line shifts.
As you can see, in a very few seconds, the resonant frequency built up in our model released the potential energy in the rock. That concussion, on a real scale, would have been felt for 100 miles. These conditions are already set up in the ground. All it takes is the activation energy to make the release happen. This is a small scale, and we're only using 30 watts in this scale.
When HAARP's broadcast array in Gakona, Alaska, sends pulses of ELF waves into the ionosphere, the waves get reflected back down and pass through the earth and ocean. If 3.6 million watts of ELF waves were purposely or accidentally aimed at an already unstable fault line, it could, according to Dr. Agnew, cause a tremendous earthquake.
You know, looking at just simple instabilities, you know, what does it take to create an avalanche, a guy walking across an unstable ice field? What does it take to trigger an earthquake? The right signal coming in when the pressures are already built up and they're at their threshold, that feather, and in our case that hammer, releases that energy.
Conspiracy theorists believe HAARP is responsible for triggering earthquakes in enemy territories, like Iran, China, and rogue parts of Afghanistan over the past 3 years. But HAARP's startling potential doesn't end there. Some say it's linked to a strange phenomena occurring in our skies. In recent years, peculiar cloud formations have been appearing in the skies all over the world with increasing frequency.
I think most of us in North America have wondered at these plumes crisscrossing the sky in grid patterns, parallel rows, and the now familiar X's. And many of us have wondered what these trails are.
While highly speculative, some researchers suggest these strange cloud formations are another agent of weather warfare. They first appear to be simply contrails, coming from high-flying jet airplanes. But these trails linger in the sky for many hours, some for even an entire day, forming an artificial cloud. Some researchers refer to them as chemtrails.
Chemtrails are deliberately sprayed by high-flying U.S. Air Force tankers, dispersing chemicals into the atmosphere.
Will Thomas has authored a book about chemtrails. Since the late 1990s, he has worked closely with another journalist in investigating these strange patterns that appear in the sky.
We have an FAA representative, in fact, a high government official, a person we came to call Deep Sky, attesting to the truth and the reality behind chemtrails. He described this program of spraying chemical trails at high altitudes in so-called commanded airspace, where commercial flights are routed around and beneath tanker airplanes belonging to the U.S. Air Force.
The theory is that chemtrails are being used in conjunction with HAARP. By spraying metal oxides into the air above enemy skies, then directing ELF waves from HAARP to heat those metal oxides, the temperature of the sky is raised to more than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, preventing the accumulation of water vapor that would otherwise form clouds and produce rainfall. The ELF waves HAARP produces bounce off the ionosphere and are able to curve around the Earth over the horizon to the ground, making any point on the globe well within reach.
One of the dangers in spreading chemtrails is that it acts as a desiccant and further dries the air. In other words, these chemical particulates can dry up the atmosphere and induce drought.
Imagine the effects of chemtrails on the battlefield, causing extended droughts in enemy countries, drying up their resources, forcing surrender. Just as terrifying is another form of weather being weaponized, rain, that can trigger devastating floods and wipe cities clean off the map.
If you can make it rain, you can have a profound effect on the battlefield.
One of the critical elements in launching a weatherized battle is being able to control rain and unleash floods.
The military have had a keen interest in the weather basically since day one. There have been a number of times the military have actually succeeded in developing technology to use the weather.
In history, there is a chilling example of a flood that may have been accidentally triggered with a weather weapon. August 15th, 1952, near the small town of Lynmouth, England, a massive rainstorm strikes. The river swells. Scores die.
It's estimated that 250 times as much rain fell in a period of 24 hours as normally fell in the entire month.
The East Lynn and West Lynn rivers flood their banks. According to the BBC, 90 million tons of water sweep down into the town of Lynmouth.
35 people were killed.
Bodies wash out to sea and are never found. Trees are uprooted, forming dams behind bridges, creating walls of water that carry huge boulders into the village, destroying shops, hotels, and homes. Was this just a freak act of nature? The prevailing theory is that it may have been a British military experiment gone bad, as they had been known to be conducting cloud seeding tests around that same time.
The British military would be experimenting with cloud seeding for the same reason as any government or military, because if you can control the weather, if you can make it rain, you can have a profound effect on the battlefield.
Allegedly, early on the morning of August 15th, 1952, some witnesses had reported seeing Royal Air Force jets flying in the area, at times disappearing from sight high above the cloud bank. Were they on a routine training mission? Or, as some people speculate, were they dumping payloads of silver iodide into the clouds? Silver iodide is one of the most common chemicals used for cloud seeding. It forces the tiny ice crystals that make up the cloud to fuse together, Once enough tiny ice crystals fuse together, they become heavy and fall to the earth in the form of rain. And on that fateful day in August of 1952, rain fell in record amounts. Did the Royal Air Force embark on daring cloud-seeding experiments without the public's knowledge?